Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Dharma, incomparable, profound, and minutely subtle, pervading the entire universe, revealing right here, right now. Yet it is rarely experienced, even in hundreds of thousands of millions of eons. We now can see this, listen to this, express and hold this. May we completely understand and actualize this Tathagata's true meaning. I believe that every human being has an innate desire for happiness and does not want to suffer. I also believe that the very purpose of life is to experience this happiness. I believe that each of us has the same potential to develop inner peace and thereby achieve happiness and joy. Whether we are rich or poor, educated or uneducated, black or white, from the East or the West, our potential is equal. We are all the same mentally and emotionally. Though some of us may have larger noses and the color of our skin may differ slightly, physically we are basically the same. The differences are minor. Our mental and emotional similarity is what is important. We share troublesome emotions as well as the positive ones that bring us inner strength and tranquility. I think that it is important for us to be aware of our potential and let this inspire our self-confidence. Sometimes we look at the negative side of things and then feel hopeless. This, I think, is a wrong view. I have no miracle to offer you. If someone has miraculous powers, then I shall seek this person's help. Frankly, I am skeptical of those who claim extraordinary powers. However, through training our minds with constant effort, we can change our mental perceptions or mental attitudes. This can make a real difference in our lives. If we have a positive mental attitude, then even when surrounded by hostility, we shall not lack inner peace. On the other hand, if our mental attitude is more negative, influenced by fear, suspicion, helplessness, or self-loathing, then even when surrounded by our best friends, in a nice atmosphere and comfortable surroundings, we shall not be happy. So mental attitude is very important. It makes a real difference to our state of happiness. Good evening again, everyone. So these opening words are from Tenzin Gyatso, His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama. And the Dalai Lama has been teaching for some 65, 70 years now. And he has always taught that all beings, without exception, all beings wish for happiness and wish not to suffer. This is common to all human beings. We all wish for peace, we wish for joy, we wish for contentment in our lives. This is basic and fundamental, a basic and fundamental hope or desire for almost all beings everywhere. So why then do we experience, either directly or indirectly, so much discontentment, dissatisfaction, so much suffering in the world? I think the problem is that we often don't know how to be happy. We don't know, we don't understand how to be happy. I titled my talk this evening, Samsara and Nibbana, or Nirvana, understanding our suffering and our happiness, because it's so important for us to have a fundamental understanding of what suffering is, what our suffering is, our discontentment, our dissatisfaction, and also an understanding of what happiness is, what true happiness in our lives is. It seems that we don't know how to cultivate or create the conditions for happiness in our lives. And I think that we don't even fully understand what true happiness or joy or contentment is, or what that looks like in our everyday existence. And for that matter, we may not fully understand what suffering or dissatisfaction or discontentment, dukkha, truly is, at least not from a Dharma perspective. And so we often search for happiness in the wrong ways and in the wrong things. We grasp at some imagined happiness, the illusion of happiness that we create, in the wrong things. Things and experiences that are external to ourselves. Things and experiences that are external to us, to our everyday existence. We believe that things and even people, possessions, money, experiences, even relationships with friends, with loved ones, that these things and experiences can bring us lasting happiness and contentment. And so we go about constantly looking for those things that we think can satisfy our innate desire for happiness, for joy, for contentment, accumulating more things that we imagine will make us truly happy. That if we seek enough things, if we acquire enough things, that this will make us happy. This will bring us happiness. But as I recently heard in a program that I was watching, kind of documentary program with the actor Will Smith, he said it's like drinking salt water. It only makes us more and more thirsty. What we do is that we often confuse pleasure and comfort for happiness. We confuse pleasure and comfort for happiness. And so we grasp for pleasure and we grasp for comfort. What we feel is pleasurable or brings us immediate pleasurable results and makes us feel comfortable. And we shouldn't misunderstand this. There is nothing inherently wrong with having things or enjoying experiences that bring us a certain joy or pleasure. There's nothing wrong with this. We all need things. We all have things that we enjoy having, or things that we enjoy doing, experiences that we enjoy experiencing, taking part in. There's nothing wrong with this. But the problem is that we far too often become attached to that feeling of pleasure. And the reality is that those pleasures are rarely, if ever, sustainable. Ultimately, they come to an end, or they change, or they shift, or they transition. And this brings about nothing but dissatisfaction, discontent, and dis-ease in our lives. We feel this unease in our lives, because even when we acquire things or obtain things external to us that bring us a certain amount of pleasure or comfort, we cannot hang on to those things forever. They will change, they will come to an end, and we're left with this unease, with this discontent, this dis-ease in our lives. And so our hope or our wish is to experience happiness, to experience peace or tranquility. But we experience a kind of conflict, a kind of clashing or dissonance between what we hope for or what we wish for and the way that we live our lives on a daily basis, the way that we go about looking for happiness in our lives. There's this constant clash between what we're hoping for, what we wish for, what we're grasping for, and how we're actually living, how we're actually trying to obtain that happiness in our lives. So when we're attached to constantly searching for happiness or peace externally, outside of ourselves, through external experiences of pleasure, we just find ourselves always searching more and more and more, constantly searching for it, like drinking the salt water. And we find ourselves rejecting anything that is a challenge to those externally driven feelings of pleasure. We're driven by all of these things that are external for us, that we think bring us happiness, but all they really do is bring us a certain amount of pleasure. But a pleasure that is finite, a pleasure that is going to end or change. And in this, we're not cultivating true inner happiness. We're not cultivating true inner peace or inner contentment. And ultimately, I think perhaps our greatest struggle, our greatest obstacle, is that we want things to be different than they actually are. We want for things to be other than how life really is. And so we struggle, we have this constant struggle to truly see and accept what is in each moment, preferring instead to impose our wanting and our attachment to something other than how life is moment by moment. And it's in our attachment, our aversion, and our delusion, those poisons, that cause more suffering and more dissatisfaction in our lives. Rather than bring us happiness, they ultimately lead to more discontent and dis-ease. And we create that conflict between what we think we wish for, what we think we want, and how we are going about trying to bring that into our lives. And then we begin to instinctively look outside of ourselves again, this time thinking that it is life, other people, relationships, things, situations, it's life and those things that are the cause of our suffering and our dissatisfaction. We again look outward, and now with a certain amount of blame. This thing, this person, this relationship, this experience that I wanted is not bringing me the happiness, the joy that I wanted. And so it's life, it's these things, these people that are causing my dissatisfaction, my discontentment. If only they would stop being that way. If only they would be and remain the way I want them to be. Now there's happiness, we think. There's happiness. That will make us happy. If they stop being this way because I don't want them to be that way, if it stops being this way, I don't want it to be that way. I want it to be this way. Why can't it be this way? Why can't it stay that way all the time? And so again, we look outside ourselves for the cause of our discontent, of our dissatisfaction. Kosho Uchiyama Roshi reminded us in saying, it's important to see that it's not life that causes suffering, but our expectation that life should be the way we want. We cannot live without expectation. But if we can handle the feelings caused by the difference between our expectations and reality, that is liberation. If we can handle the feelings caused by the difference between our expectations and reality, life as it is, that is liberation. These feelings of pleasure and comfort that we constantly grasp for and become attached to are not happiness. We think it's happiness because it temporarily makes us feel good. It temporarily brings us a certain amount of pleasure or comfort. But this is not happiness. It is not true contentment or joy. They're ultimately nothing more than a poison in our lives, perpetuating samsara, that wheel of suffering. Our grasping, our attachment, those poisons, attachment, aversion, delusion, they perpetuate this constant wheel of samsara, this wheel of suffering, of discontentment. And worse yet, we become so attached to wanting and expecting to only experience pleasure and comfort in our lives all the time that we want to simply run away from and avoid any difficulties, any challenges, any discontent in our lives. We're so attached to chasing after, we think we're chasing after happiness, but all we're doing is chasing and chasing after this pleasure and comfort. And we become so attached to the chase of that pleasure and comfort that we simply want to reject, we want to run away from any difficulties, any challenges or discontent in our lives. We think that happiness or contentment is or must be the complete absence of any discontentment, the complete absence of any challenges or dissatisfaction in our lives, that this is what it means to be happy. To be happy, there can be no suffering. There can be no discontentment. There can be no challenges, no difficulties. This is what we think it means to be happy, the absence of suffering. Likewise, we tend to think that enlightenment or awakening or nirvana is the complete absence of any suffering or any dissatisfaction in our lives. That if someone is enlightened or if they've awakened or if they've achieved insight, then they must not suffer. They must not experience any discontentment, any challenges, any difficulties. After all, they're enlightened or they're awakened or they've achieved a certain level of insight, so they must not suffer. But I think that, of course, that's a complete misunderstanding. And that misunderstanding only leads to more dukkha, more suffering and dis-ease. The late John Dido Luri Roshi said, "It is within samsara that we experience nirvana. It can't be any other way." It's one of my favorite quotes from John Dido Luri Roshi. It is within samsara that we experience nirvana. It cannot be any other way. Awakening or insight, this clear seeing into the true nature of life, awakening or insight without suffering, this is a delusion. This is a delusion. This expectation that awakening is something that is without suffering, that insight, true insight, means there's an absence of suffering. True happiness or contentment without suffering is a delusion. And so we have to ask ourselves, what if it is our very challenges, our difficulties, our suffering? What if those things are the very ground, the very fertile soil from which true inner happiness and contentment and peace grows, unfolds, and is nurtured? Awakening to true inner happiness or contentment is not the absence of challenges, of difficulties in our lives, or dissatisfaction in our lives, but rather it is learning how to recognize and to hold that dissatisfaction or suffering, to be with it and to transform it by understanding it and then responding to it. The late Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh often used a phrase that I'm sure all of you are probably familiar with. He used the phrase, no mud, no lotus. No mud, no lotus. This was one of his favorite teachings. We will all experience difficulties and challenges in our day-to-day life and in our relationships. This is part of our human experience, and we cannot escape that. We cannot run away from that. I want to share a piece by Thich Nhat Hanh. He says, "We all want to be happy, and there are many books and teachers in the world that try to help people be happier, yet we all continue to suffer. Therefore, we may think that we're somehow doing it wrong. Somehow, we are failing at happiness. That is not true. Being able to enjoy happiness doesn't require that we have zero suffering. In fact, The art of happiness is also the art of suffering well. When we learn to acknowledge, embrace, and understand our suffering, we suffer much less. Not only that, but we're also able to go further and transform our suffering into understanding, compassion, and joy for ourselves and for others. One of the most difficult things for us to accept is that there is no realm where there's only happiness and there's no suffering. This doesn't mean that we should despair. Suffering can be transformed. As soon as we open our mouth to say suffering, we know that the opposite of suffering is already there as well. Where there is suffering, there is happiness. If we focus exclusively on pursuing happiness, we may regard suffering as something to be ignored or resisted. We think of it as something that gets in the way of happiness. But the art of happiness is also at the same time the art of knowing how to suffer well. If we know how to use our suffering, we can transform it and suffer much less. Knowing how to suffer well is essential to realizing true happiness. If we can learn to see and skillfully engage with both the presence of happiness and the presence of suffering, we will go in the direction of enjoying life more. Every day, we go a little farther in that direction, and eventually, we realize that suffering and happiness are not two separate things. And we can see this in the life story of the Buddha, of the historical Buddha Shakyamuni. We can see this very thing, which is why the Buddha's story is so important for us. The Buddha's life story tells us that when he was still Prince Siddhartha, he lived a life of comfort. He lived a life of pleasure. He basically lacked for nothing. And so he lived this life of experiencing pleasure, experiencing comfort, experiencing what he believed was happiness and joy. But there was something within him. There was something within him where he felt it was life for him. He seemed it was just off. There was something off, and he began to explore this. And this led to his encounters with suffering. He experienced sickness, old age, death. He experienced suffering. What he once thought was happiness, this life of just pleasure and comfort that he was experiencing, he then saw the other side. He saw that there was suffering. And ultimately, seeing that suffering, experiencing that discontentment, that dissatisfaction, those challenges, led him on his search to awakening. And it led him to his teaching. The Buddha taught first the Four Noble Truths. I think all of us, or most of us, are familiar with the Four Noble Truths. And the first truth was that all life is conditioned by dukkha. All life is conditioned by dukkha. Now here's where we get into this problem with words and language at times. Because as we know, The Buddha did not speak English. In the Buddha's time, he grew up with the Pali language. There was also Sanskrit. The word that the Buddha used was dukkha, that all life is conditioned by dukkha. This word was later translated into English. The closest translation was suffering. And so it's often taught that the Buddha said all life is conditioned by suffering. Life is suffering. But that's not truly what the Buddha said. The Buddha said all life is conditioned by dukkha. First and foremost, the Buddha was not saying life is just suffering. That's it. There's nothing more. Life is just, it's awful. It's just suffering. Deal with it. That's not what the Buddha said. It's not what the Buddha taught. But he taught the word dukkha, and that word actually means, in the original Pali language, it referred to a cart, an ox cart. An ox cart has wheels. Each wheel has a center, and the axis or axle of the cart runs through the center of those wheels. What dukkha really meant was a wheel, the wheel of an ox cart that was out of kilter. In other words, that it was thrown off balance, off center. And this is much what we experience in our lives. When we hear that word suffering, we tend to think of just pain and anguish, deep suffering. And we may think to ourselves, well, my life isn't full of like this awful suffering, this deep pain and anguish. I may experience challenges, but my life isn't, I wouldn't say that I'm constantly suffering. But of course, that's not what the Buddha taught. He taught that life is conditioned by dukkha, by this pervasive dissatisfaction or discontentment, this feeling of being off balance, off center, like the wheel of the cart that we experience throughout our lives, this dukkha, this being thrown off balance by the challenges, by the difficulties that we all will experience in our lives. We all will experience discontentment at times. We will experience challenges, difficulties, dissatisfaction. We cannot escape that. It is a part of life. But as Thich Nhat Hanh pointed to in his reading, in understanding dukkha, what dukkha really is, we can also see and understand the other side of that. In the Pali and Sanskrit, the counterpart to dukkha was sukha. And the Buddha taught that sukha is also automatically present. Life isn't just dukkha, this dissatisfaction, this being off balance, off center, but also present is sukha. And sukha is often translated as contentment, happiness, joy, bliss, ease of being, or being in a good space. Sukha is the wheel or the axis back in alignment, back in the center. And so while we do experience dukkha in our lives, this being thrown off balance, knocked off center, we also can experience sukha, returning to the center, returning to balance in our lives. Samsara, this cycle or wheel of existence, this pervasive dis-ease or dissatisfaction, that feeling of being off balance, off center, is due to the three poisons of attachment, aversion, and delusion or ignorance. When we become lost in attachment, that constant wanting, grasping, chasing after, or aversion, I don't want that. I want to push that away. I want to reject that because all I want is the pleasure and the comfort. And the delusion, not realizing our attachment, our aversion, not realizing dukkha and how we experience dukkha in our lives. This is samsara. This is this wheel of existence, this wheel of pervasive suffering, if you will, or dissatisfaction, discontentment, being thrown off center. The other word that I also don't like to use is the word cessation. It's taught that the Buddha taught in the Noble Truths that there is a cessation of suffering. The original word was translated into English, once again, as cessation. I don't like to use that word because for me, cessation implies a complete ending. As if we're told, you will no longer experience any suffering in your life. You follow the Noble Eightfold Path, you practice, and you will no longer experience any challenges, any difficulties, any dissatisfaction. You will never be thrown off center again. That's what cessation implies to me. I prefer to use the word that Thich Nhat Hanh always used, transformation. The path can absolutely guide us in transforming our suffering, our discontentment, our dissatisfaction. In other words, how we experience it, how we understand it, how we hold it, and how we respond to it. This is transformation, the transformation of suffering. It tells us that even when, if we awaken, if we experience insight, we follow the path, we are dedicated to the path, of course we will continue to experience challenges in our lives. What human life, what sentient life does not experience challenges, difficulties, or dissatisfaction of time, over time, over the course of our lives? But how we hold that suffering, how we respond to that suffering, that can be transformed. When, not if, but when we are thrown off balance, off center, if we're just going with attachment and aversion, I want, I don't want, I want this, I don't want this, then we're constantly going to be off center. We're constantly going to be off balance. But when we understand and are able to be present for our suffering, our discontentment and dissatisfaction, when we're able to hold it and understand it and respond to it, then we bring ourselves back to center, back to being rooted. This is transformation. And in transformation, the transformation of suffering, there is liberation. There is freedom from the way we have always experienced our suffering, reacted to our suffering, the way we've always run from our suffering and tried to run towards pleasure and comfort, thinking that that's happiness. Transformation is liberation. It is nirvana. And nirvana, that word, the Pali or Sanskrit word, nirvana in Sanskrit, nibbana in Pali, that word meant something akin to the extinguishing of a flame, blowing out a flame. The flame or the fire of our suffering and that wheel of samsara, of how we're constantly living in attachment, aversion, chasing, running away. Nirvana is the extinguishing of that flame, the blowing out of that flame. In extinguishing the flame of our own attachments, aversion, and delusion, we begin to uncover that inner happiness, that inner peace, that inner joy. What we often refer to in Zen as contentment or inner contentment. My brother and sister monks will remember that at Pine Wind there was a huge rock that sat right by the entranceway as you entered, as you drove into the monastery. There was a huge rock that said, "I am learning to be content." This was our practice. We are learning to be content. We are learning how to understand and hold that suffering, that dissatisfaction, that discontentment. We are learning how to extinguish the flame of attachment, aversion, and delusion, and experience true inner happiness, inner contentment. That inner contentment is remaining upright and balanced, even in the midst of suffering, challenges, and vexations. And this is where our practice, this practice, both on and off the cushion, guides us, strengthens us, nurtures that inner resilience in us, especially during challenging times, during difficult times. Training the mind and the heart, or kokoro, the heart within, the heart-mind within. The Tibetan monk Matthew Ricard says that this practice, this training, there is both a personal and an impersonal way of nurturing happiness in our lives, of cultivating happiness in our lives. In training the mind by looking deeply at our mind, examining, investigating our mind, and then actively cultivating or nurturing those qualities of compassion, of kindness, of caring, of generosity. Those are the things that bring us true inner happiness, peace, and contentment. We cultivate that clear seeing, what is known in Zen as vidya, a clear seeing or look, seeing into or seeing through. We cultivate this clear seeing through the practice of meditation. The Tibetan word for meditation is gom. And gom is translated as becoming familiar with. That is their definition of meditation, gom, to become familiar with. When we sit zazen, when we sit in this practice of meditation, we are becoming familiar with our own mind. We are becoming familiar with our habitual ways of thinking, our habitual patterns of thinking, the ways in which we create our own obstacles, our own suffering, our own discontentment. We become familiar with that. We begin to see more clearly those patterns of thinking. We begin to see more clearly our attachments, our aversion, our delusions, our ignorance, that not knowing, not understanding. We begin to see this more clearly by becoming familiar with ourselves, to study the self, to become familiar with our own mind. And then we practice actively cultivating those qualities of compassion and kindness, those qualities of generosity, of loving kindness, of gratitude, which allow us to move beyond the delusion of a separate self. As we cultivate those qualities of compassion, kindness, and caring, we begin to move away. As we cultivate both clear seeing, that becoming familiar with our mind and our mental habits and patterns, combined with actively cultivating those bodhisattva qualities of mind and heart, compassion, kindness, caring, generosity, then we begin to move away or move beyond just our own self-concerns, our self-preoccupation. And we begin to cultivate concern and caring for others, looking outside ourselves beyond this self that I've always thought myself to be, this separate self. This is what we cultivate through practice. We begin to move beyond that preoccupation with the self, my happiness, my pleasure, my comfort. And we move toward an ever-expanding circle of concern for the well-being and the happiness of others. We're slowly but steadily liberated from our habitual and automatic self-concern and self-preoccupation. And maybe the ironic thing or the gift of this is that we begin to cultivate a greater sense of true inner happiness, inner joy, inner peace and well-being ourselves, one that is not reliant upon chasing after external and fleeting sources or causes and conditions for happiness. Like trying to grasp on and hold on to a single handful of water. When we're constantly chasing after those external sources of happiness, those things outside ourselves that we think will bring us happiness, it's like trying to grab a single handful of water and to hold it in your hand. And so in this practice, as we move away from that self-concern, that constant self-preoccupation, we cultivate concern and care for others. And in turn, this brings us, it brings joy and happiness and inner joy and inner happiness to ourselves as well. This contentment is true happiness. Not reliant upon chasing after external things. And this inner contentment, as we begin to nurture and to cultivate this true inner contentment and inner peace, this contentment and peace is always with me because it is me. It is each one of us. And it's with me even in times of suffering, of challenges, of difficulties. My attachment, grasping just for external sources of happiness, throw me off kilter, off balance, constantly throwing me off kilter and off balance. But that inner mental happiness and peace that I cultivate within myself through practice and training, clear seeing and actively cultivating those bodhisattva qualities, this brings me back to center. It brings each one of us back to center, upright, and balanced. And so the practice of this path, this path does not promise to give us happiness. It does not promise to give us peace, joy, and contentment. It does not promise to take away our suffering, our challenges, and difficulties. But practice enables us to see for ourselves with greater clarity those obstacles, those barriers, and those entanglements within ourselves that prevent us from realizing true happiness, peace, and contentment. And also to actively nurture within ourselves those qualities of heart and mind that bring true inner peace to ourselves and bring true inner peace to others. This is the practice.